Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion. If you'd like to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. You will be prompted to record your first and last name. The conference is being recorded. If you have any objection, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the call over to your host, Ms. Lauren Gatos. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you so much. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call. Part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to the government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm Lauren Gatos with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating today's call. Today's update will feature three short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question-and-answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded at http://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/sotsle/briefings, plural. The first presenter today is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the June U.S. and global climate reports in the Drought Monitor. The next presenter is Crystal Stiles, an applied climatologist with the High Plains Regional Climate Center, who will discuss recent extreme weather conditions in the region. And our final presenter today is Matthew Rosenkrantz, a seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Nino and La Nina update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. Our first speaker will be Jake Crouch from NOAA.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start off speaking to slide number 2 on a slide deck you can download from our website, looking at globally average temperatures for the month of June. These numbers were released yesterday morning. It was the fifth warmest June on record for the globe, with a temperature of 0.75 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average. And this did mark our 402nd consecutive month with global average temperatures at least nominally above the 20th century average. Looking at land and ocean surfaces separately, both the land surface of the globe and the ocean surface of the globe each had their sixth warmest June on record. In terms of temperatures over land, we did see some regional noteworthy warmth that I can talk about on the map on the right. These show temperatures and how they compared to average. So we did see some record warmth over parts of Central Asia, as well as parts of Europe, parts of the Middle East and Eastern Mediterranean over land. And over ocean, we did see record warmth in both parts of the North Atlantic and South Atlantic, as well as parts of the Pacific Ocean. We do notice one area of really cold temperatures in the North Atlantic off the southern coast of Greenland, with some record cold temperatures observed there. This feature has been a persistent one over the last several years in this part of the North Atlantic. I did want to mention a few national statistics. Many European countries did see one of their top 10 warmest Junes on record, with a record-setting heat wave impacting parts of Northern Europe late in the month. It was also very dry for many parts of Northern Europe. A noteworthy statistic that has been reported on was a temperature of 108.7 degrees Celsius, a minimum temperature in Oman. It was reported that this was a global record for minimum temperature. I do want to note that we do have a temperature warmer than that in our record here at NCEI of 110 degrees for a minimum temperature in Death Valley on July 5th, 1918. So while this record needs to be adjudicated by the WMO, the World Meteorological Organization, we do have a higher record in our data set here at NCEI. Moving on to slide number 3 to look at global temperatures for the year-to-date for January through June. It currently ranks as our fourth warmest year-to-date on record, behind 2016, 2015, and 2017. This is our horse race graphic, so as you move from left to right through the graphic, you see accumulated year-to-date temperatures. The black line indicates the 2018 value, with the end of the line indicating where we are for January through June so far, and showing how we rank as fourth warmest, slightly warmer than we were in 2010. We do notice that the 2018 line does seem to follow the 2010 line for the year-to-date so far. So we're quite a bit warmer than most of our years in the 139 years we have data for the globe, but we are off of the record mark that we saw in 2016. Moving on to slide number 4 to look at what happened here in the U.S. during the month of June. It was our third warmest June for the lower 48, with a temperature that was 3 degrees above average. The map on the left shows how temperatures broke down during the month, with above-average temperatures across much of the U.S., particularly the Southwest, much of the Plains, parts of the Midwest and Southeast. We did see record warm minimum temperatures or overnight lows over much of the central United States. We did see below-average conditions in parts of the Northwest and Northeast. And the Northeast did experience a record-setting heat wave at the end of June that lasted into parts of July, but that late June warmth was not enough to compensate for below-average temperatures earlier in the month. Looking at precipitation, it was a near-average June overall, but we did see numerous regional extremes. We saw above-average precipitation across parts of the Northern Rockies and Plains, Midwest, and Mid-Atlantic, with several significant flash flooding events of particular note, including one in the upper Midwest, where the upper peninsula of Michigan was particularly hard hit, the Texas coast, where a low of tropical origins brought record rainfall to that part of the state, as well as in the Mid-Atlantic, where Richmond, Virginia, observed its second wettest day ever in its period of record. We did see below-average precipitation in parts of the West and the South, with that warm temperatures and lack of precipitation in the West contributing to the numerous large and destructive wildfires in that part of the country. Moving on to slide number five, looking at what happened for the first half of the year in the contiguous United States. We did see, particularly east of the Rockies, large swings in temperatures with very warm months and very cold months for the first 6 months of the year, but averaged out over the first for the January through June period, it's been our 14th warmest year to date, with record warmth and near record warmth across much of the Southwest. I did want to note this is our 25th consecutive year with January through June temperatures above the 20th century average for the lower 48 states. Moving on to my last slide, looking at the U.S. Drought Monitor that was released this morning, about 31% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought, and this is up about 4.6% since late May. We did see drought improvement in parts of the Plains, Southeast, and the High Plains, with drought expanding and intensifying in the West, South, parts of the Central Great Lakes in the Northeast, with drought also developing in Hawaii and abnormally dry conditions in Puerto Rico. And with that, I will pass it off to Crystal.
Thank you, Jay. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to, moving on to slide number seven, give you a crop update for the High Plains region. In general, the corn and soybeans are in pretty good shape across the High Plains. However, we did have an interesting start to the growing season because April was very cold for the region, and that delayed the planting season for much of the area. So there were concerns about that, but then we saw this dramatic turnaround in temperatures in May, and May and June were both well above normal for the region. And so crops then progressed very quickly, and in fact, there's discussion that some crops are likely to reach maturity early this year because of that warmth. As Jake mentioned, minimum temperatures were rather warm in June, and that was certainly the case in the High Plains. Minimum temperatures above 70 degrees, and in some cases, some isolated instances in Nebraska and Kansas where low temperatures did not get below 80 degrees at night. There are concerns that these high minimum temperatures may negatively impact corn yields across the region, so we certainly will need some cooler weather to help the crops right now. Winter wheat harvest is wrapping up across the area, and it's looking like winter wheat production will be down compared to last year, especially across Kansas and Colorado. And much of this has to do with a combination of several factors, one of which the dryness and drought that much of the region had been experiencing since October during the winter wheat growing season was one reason. And also there have been several hailstorms that have occurred in these areas that have decimated the crop. And so we will be seeing some lower production this year due to that. Moving on to slide number eight, I wanted to talk a little bit about some flooding along the Missouri River. So this winter, the Northern Plains and Northern Rockies had a very much above normal snowpack year, and that in combination with heavy spring precipitation across the region created some very high runoff this year for the Missouri River. In fact, June had the third highest monthly runoff in 120 years of record, according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And because of that, there have been higher than average releases from the Corps on all of their main SIM projects this year. This is really to evacuate those stored floodwaters, and this is expected through the summer and the fall as well. Luckily, only minor flooding has been occurring along the river, as you'll see in the graphic at the top from the U.S. Geological Survey. Mostly areas of northern and eastern Nebraska along the river, we do see some areas above flood stage, but the Corps is making adjustments to their releases according to basin conditions, so hopefully there won't be any more than minor flooding from that event. Severe weather season also got a late start this year because of the cold April in the plains. However, it's more than made up for that to date. Just recently, earlier this month, there was some severe weather in North Dakota that was notable, including large hail and high winds that damaged several crops in the area of Oaks, which is in southeastern North Dakota. And then a couple of days later, unfortunately, a tornado struck an RV park in the northwestern portion of the state in Watford City, and it did kill an infant and injure 28 people. Moving on to slide number 9. Drought has been an issue in our region this year. While there has been some improvements in the northern part of the plains, parts of Colorado are not doing so well. Unlike to the north, the snowpack was not very good at all this year in Colorado, and they also didn't get very much precipitation in the spring to help with that. So now we're seeing a lot of fires popping up, and they're becoming quite large. So just a couple notable ones. The Spring Creek Fire has now become the third largest wildfire in Colorado history. That's burning in south central Colorado near Great Sand Dunes National Park. And also the 416 fire, although it has only burned about half the acreage of the Spring Creek Fire, it's already the sixth largest fire in Colorado history. There are a couple of other fires that have burned this year that are in the top 10 to 15 largest fires. So it has been a bad year for fires out there. And I wanted to mention that with the monsoon season upon us, can bring some heavy precipitation to Colorado. And so that has people optimistic that drought conditions will ease and fire conditions will get better. However, it's important to remember that there could be some issues because of burn scars that are left on the landscape. A lot of heavy precipitation can increase the risk of flash flooding and mudslides in those areas as well. And now I will turn it over to Matt.
Good morning, everybody. This is Matthew Rosenkranz from the Climate Prediction Center. Up first on slide number 10 is our recap of the latest sea surface temperatures and status of El Nino Southern Oscillation. What we've noticed so far in the past month is that we have a lot of above normal sea surface temperatures in most of the equatorial Pacific. Specifically, the latest Nino indices for the Nino 3, Nino 3.4, and Nino 4 regions were between 0.3 degrees Celsius and 0.6 degrees Celsius above normal. We do notice one area for the Nino 1.2 index is actually below normal, and that's at minus 0.2 degrees Celsius. In addition to these surface temperature anomalies, we are noticing a lot of warm water that's in the subsurface down to about 300 meters. So there is quite a large reservoir of warm water that is able to be brought to the surface and continue these the warm event or El Nino conditions. And that helps us lead to a forecast that is about 65% odds for El Nino during the fall, with actually increasing to about 70% chance of El Nino during the winter of 2018-19. Moving on to slide 11, the monthly forecast for August. Some of the main factors in the monthly forecast for August were the warm sea surface temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea, contributing to high probabilities for above normal temperatures for western and southwestern Alaska. Although along the northern slope of Alaska, we're actually noticing some, in the open waters there, some below normal sea surface temperatures. So there's a lot less certainty there where long-term trends would favor warm, but short-term trends would favor cold. So that's why we have equal chances indicated on the map there. Further west across, or further south across the western U.S., trends really dominate the August time period. So that's why we have above normal temperatures forecast or favored there through August. As you go to the northern plains, we have there's a lot more uncertainty. There are some modes of forcing in the tropics that could put some cold spells into, especially the early part of August, across the northern plains. So that counteracts the long-term trend. So we have equal chances forecast there. From Missouri and southward to Texas and across the parts of the Gulf Coast, the forecast for August is actually for below normal precipitation, which would favor above normal temperatures as you dry out a lot of the soils there. Into the northeast, trends there are quite strong in August, and there's not a real good signal of precipitation to counteract those trends. So we would favor above normal temperatures there. And that would kind of continue the theme this early in this presentation of above normal overnight time lows. We are expecting those overnight time lows to stay on the higher end of the scale, and that's where we're seeing most of that uptick in the above normal, contributing to the above normal temperatures. Moving on to slide 12, the seasonal forecast for August, September, October. The strongest signal we have in the entire U.S. is actually for the northern slope of Alaska, where 30, 40 years ago, there was the ice edge would get close to the towns and the reporting stations that are on the north slope of Alaska. But with that later onset of the ice, now it's really not until November. The stations and all the areas in northern Alaska really have a strong signal for above normal temperatures. It's been about the past 13 years where the above normal temperatures have been favored or have been observed in August, September, October, and the signal actually gets stronger as you get into September, October, November. Moving to the CONUS, the Western CONUS especially, from the Four Corners region up to the kind of central Pacific Northwest, our strongest signals for above normal temperatures, greater than 60% chance there, is really supported by trends, as well as the forecast from a lot of our dynamical models for a robust monsoon, which would favor a lot of high pressure in the upper levels, which really contributes to warm temperatures at the surface. There's also increasing dryness that was talked about earlier in the presentation across the Pacific Northwest, and that would have a positive feedback where the dryness helps increase the temperatures and the temperatures increase the dryness. So there's a loop there. So that's what we're forecasting above normal temperatures there. From the northern plains into kind of the western parts of the Carolinas, maybe southern Appalachians, there's a lot of uncertainty in the models, as well as a developing El Nino during the month of October would actually have a cool signature in that part of the country, basically from Kansas over to the western Carolinas and even a little bit into Missouri and Arkansas. So that's why our lowest odds for above normal temperatures are through that region. Again, the August, September, October forecast for the northeast favors above normal temperatures. Circling back to the above normal monsoon or the active monsoon, we do have above normal precipitation forecast for most of the southwest U.S., and that's related to some potential late season tropical cyclone activity that is very typical of onsets of El Niños. So during October, you can actually get some Pacific hurricanes and tropical storms that their moisture will come up through Mexico into the southwest U.S. So that's one contributing factor. And also, if you do have the hotter temperatures over the western U.S., you can actually, it'll increase the overall monsoonal circulation. That's on a continental scale. In parallel with that, when you do have an enhanced monsoon, there are some statistical relationships to a dry area in the southern plains in the lower Mississippi Valley, and that's indicated in the forecast as well. So moving on to the drought outlook for the next 3 months, that's on slide 13. With the forecast for above normal precipitation, we are forecasting some drought improvement across the southwest, Utah, western Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona. We're also forecasting some drought development from Texas all the way up to Missouri, consistent with the forecast for below normal precipitation there. Also, the Pacific Northwest, with the warm temperatures and below normal precipitation forecast there, we are expecting some drought development, especially across the state of Washington. And that's all I have. So I'll turn it back to Lauren.
Thanks, Matt, so much. We'll now move ahead and take specific questions from call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. Operator, please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and queue up the first question.
Certainly. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. You'll be prompted to record your first and last name. Please check that your phone is unmuted before you record. If you decide to withdraw your request, please press star two. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is from Craig Miller, KQED. Your line is open, sir.
Hey, thank you very much. Probably from Matt. Since we know the correlation between ENSO and precipitation in California is weak except for the stronger, some of the strongest El Ninos, do we have any sort of, are you able to handicap the strength of this thing yet?
No, we do not do specific forecasts of the strength of El Nino and La Nina. That is an ongoing research project that we're working on right now, but we don't typically do forecasts of that. Now, the models do actually have, if I went just pure model forecast, they do have a lot of the forecasts getting about 1.4, 1.3 degrees above normal, which would not be a record, but it would be kind of in the middle of the pack for moderate to strong events.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question is from Bryce Anderson, the Progressive Farmer. Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you for the briefing. And I probably my question, I think, is maybe for Jake, because it has to do with the performance of the QPF 7-day precipitation forecast model. And over the last several months, we've seen this model not deal very well with what has been a real dry area, like Crystal talked about, in Missouri and Kansas. In fact, northern Missouri, northeastern Kansas are now in drought level 3, extreme drought. And do you have any comments on why the forecast model doesn't seem to have dealt with that dryness very well? Basically, it's been over-forecasting rainfall consistently throughout this season, and we have producers there now who are just giving up on waiting for grain out of their corn, and they're just chopping it for livestock feed so that they get something out of the feed value of the plant.
This is Jake. Unfortunately, here at NCEI, we actually don't do any forecasting. We just report out on observations and what has already occurred. So I don't have any. I don't have an opinion on what might be causing the QPF to produce lower estimates of or higher estimates of rainfall than what is occurring.
Our next question is from Doyle Rice, USA Today. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. Thanks for doing this. I'm just, in general, curious if NOAA does do a revised hurricane forecast. I know some other groups make revisions during the year, and I just wondered with the onset of an El Nino if you might be revising the seasonal hurricane forecast.
This is Matthew Rosenkranz, Climate Prediction Center. Yes, our revised hurricane outlook, our hurricane seasonal outlook, will be updated August 9th.
Oh, okay. Thanks for the info.
You're welcome.
If anyone else would like to queue up and ask a question, please press star followed by one at this time. Unmute your phone and record your name. At this time, we have no one in the queue.
This is Lauren again. If there are no further questions, I will move forward and we'll wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in today's conference call. I will end by reminding everyone to mark calendars for some upcoming releases. The August U.S. Climate Highlights will be released on August 8th. The August Global Climate Highlights will be released on August 20th. And our next monthly climate call will take place on Thursday, August 18th. As Matt mentioned, we do anticipate updating the hurricane seasonal outlook on August 9th. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory site within approximately 90 minutes after we conclude today. If you have further informational needs, please email me, Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N, dot, my last name, Gacheus, which is G-A-C-H-E-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, .gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. This concludes today's call. I thank you all so much for your participation.
All participants may disconnect at this time.